copyright forum of Christian leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
This morning I'll be talking to you about the team focus arrow. In other words, a part of what you need to do as a leader is to be able to focus your own thinking quickly. But a part of what you need to do is to be able to focus your whole team's thinking quickly. To be able to get your whole team on the same sheet of paper, not at the micro level, not at the detail level, but at the broad level. At the 50,000, we call it at the 50,000 foot level, not at ground level. And so the tool I'd like to teach you next is for focusing top leadership's thinking and avoiding team confusion. You remember I said that all of the books you've ever read or all of the tapes you've ever watched or the lectures you've ever listened to can fit on one of eight shelves. The first is focusing your life, personal development, focusing your life, asking fog-getting questions, balancing competing priorities, communicating with confidence. Then some tools are for planning your organization's future, building a championship team, generating consistent cash flow, or managing reserves. The last tool we talked about was a personal one. How do you focus your own thinking? This one is on the organizational development level of how do you plan your organization's future. So they're on different shelves. Last one is personal, this one's organizational. So how do you get, again, a tool that is scalable, that will work with you as a department head or as a division head or as a senior executive of a small company, a large company, the president of a nation? How do you find a tool like that? And how do you find something that will work relatively quickly? Because again, anything that doesn't work, regardless of size of the organization, or won't work for you 10 years from now as well as it works today, or 50 years from now as well as it works today, I'm not interested in teaching you. This tool will. I've worked with many groups on this tool. It's proven many times to work. Here's how it works. Let me give you a quick overview first. The first thing you have to make sure if you take over a team or if you're leading your team through a planning session or planning retreat is that you're working on the same dream. Now the dream, I define your dream and vision are the same thing. I define your dream or your vision as the difference you hope to make sometime before you die or the team breaks up. There's the difference you hope to make before your team is gone. There's what difference are we trying to make here on this team? Then once that's clear, which usually takes about 10 minutes or so, because it isn't a very difficult question because you all sort of know the answer, unless you're coming together for the first time. In light of that, what is the number one thing which will be our goal for the next year? That sounds easy, but it'll take your team probably 2 years, or I'm sorry, 2 hours to think that through. Not because it's a complex question, but because each department will think its priority is the priority. Because we've been thinking, no, Christian education is the thing we've got to focus on next year. And someone else is thinking, no, we've got to get a new computer. Next person is saying, no, we've got to get a brand new sanctuary or something. It's like, everyone is thinking about it from their perspective. That's why it's such a powerful tool for helping a team think through its direction as compared to an individual. It'll take a while to negotiate and to reason and discuss. As a whole team, what is our most important thing to add this year? It takes a while. Once that's clear, however, and you ask, what's the number one thing keeping us from that? Again, not logically, not taking hours to do research on it, but what are your instincts saying? What's your number one response saying? What's the number one thing keep holding us back? what you're going to find is that most people come up with an answer very quickly. And then, as you listen to the other team members, you may say, you know, as I listen to her or as I listen to him, that is a bigger roadblock than I mentioned. And pretty soon it gets to the point where you've got your number one thing your team thinks is holding them, keeping them back from reaching this goal. Then the fourth thing you do is look at opportunity. To say, what is the opportunity that we didn't have a year ago that we won't have if we don't take advantage of it now, maybe a month or two from now. But if we could seize this opportunity, it would accelerate everything we're doing. What's our number one opportunity at the moment to accelerate our direction toward the goal? And then the fifth question is, on our team, who is the number one person that'd be the best driver to be the person responsible to have us never forget the goal for the year? And work with other teams and work with each team to have them input when it's appropriate as to how to reach, how to use their resource or their questions or their answers to make sure that our whole team gets to the goal. Who is the person? Now, sometimes that person is you as the top leader. Sometimes it's the head of your computer department. Sometimes it's the head of the Christian education group. Sometimes it's the head of, it depends on what the goal is. Now, here's the kicker, however. Ask how much time is that person currently spending, the right person spending on the goal we've just agreed is the number one goal for the year. What you're going to find, it's usually 30%, it's usually 5 to 30%. In other words, the most important thing for your team to be working on has the person that should be working on it spending 5% of their time on it, or 10 or 15%. But here's the principle I'd like to give you. Investing 60% of your time in a project does not guarantee its success. You can spend 100% of your time on a project and have it still fail miserably. But spending less than 60% of your time on a project guarantees its mediocrity. It'll be mediocre compared to what it could be if you'd focus on it. So the person who's a driving force may spend 100% of time trying to get everybody corralled into reaching the goal and still fail. Still not be able to reach the goal. But unless they're spending at least 60% of their time there, you can guarantee that the results will be mediocre at best. Now, let me go back and unpack this a little bit. Now that I've given you the overview of it. Like I said, your dream is the difference you hope to make sometime before you separate as a team. It's very important to define your dream or your vision, because that's what energizes a team. What energizes you as a leader is your dream. If you didn't have a dream, if you ever lose your dream, you're going to find your energy going just like that. Some people confuse a dream, which is not measurable. It's directional. My dream is strengthening Christian leaders worldwide until the Lord returns. Until I die. Actually, until the Lord returns. Through my tapes and books and stuff like that. Through my website, which is just bobbeal.com. I want to strengthen Christian leaders worldwide until the Lord returns through what I've done. But you see, it's not measurable. It's directional. It's a dream that I can spend the rest of my life doing and never make progress in that direction, but not get there. If you confuse a dream and a goal, like to make $1 million, a lot of people you'll see they confuse a dream and a goal. I want to make $1 million. I want to be the president. I want to do this. When they reach it, you notice them being disoriented and confused and not knowing where to go and their energy level going just like this, because they no longer have a dream. When you no longer have a dream, your energy is gone. What gets you out of bed in the morning is the difference you hope to make sometime before you die. Same is true with all your staff. That's why it's so important to have dream alignment when you're hiring. It's because you want what gets you out of bed to get them out of bed. Once you've got that in mind, you say, to move in that direction, what is the number one thing we need as a team to get done this year? We need to add this year that's measurable. We will know at the end of the year, did we get it done or not? Check. So if you can get that done, you make the most progress in the direction of your dream. Once that's clear through some debate and discussion, and half the team feels, oh, I didn't get my way, I didn't get it to be my goal this year, but I can see it is the right goal, then you've got team unity around a common goal. And then to say, what's the number one thing holding us back? There may be 10 things holding you back. But out of the 10 things, what's the number one thing? Because deal with number one first, and often a lot of the other symptoms will go away. So when you get rid of the blockage, then you go to the opportunity to say, if we could get rid of this blockage, and we could take advantage of this opportunity, which we didn't have last year, but we've got this year. And let me teach you how to find opportunity. You, as a leader, there are three kinds of leaders in terms of orientation and motivation, energizing. Some of you in the room are goal-oriented. You may say, I'm goal-oriented. I'm a leader. I'm goal-oriented. Almost assuming like all leaders are goal-oriented. Wrong. Most leaders are not goal-oriented. About 15% of the leaders I've ever worked with were goal-oriented. 15%. 80% are problem-oriented. They don't think in the coming year, what goals do I want to reach? They think, what problems do we need to solve in our organization? That's just as good an orientation as a goal. You got the offense as the goal setters and the defense as the problem solvers. There's going to be no great teams in the world if you have a great offense and no defense. And some people say, I don't like goals and I don't like problems. But I like opportunity. I wait for the opportunity to come up to accelerate everything. That's your special teams. But let me show you a way to, if you're goal-oriented, you say, I just put blinders on and I go toward that goal. Don't bother me with opportunities. But if you're not naturally opportunity-oriented, let me show you sort of a foolproof, fail-safe way to spot opportunities you don't naturally see. Peter Drucker said, last year's unexpected success, it's there, right under, on your paper there, last year's unexpected success is next year's opportunity. You know what? Every department, every division that you have in your entire organization, even the ones that did not perform well last year, even the ones that had dismal years, can tell you what little thing was unexpectedly successful. It surprised them how well this little piece of it did. Last year's unexpected success is next year's opportunity. Think about it for just a minute. I want to give you 15 seconds. I want you to answer in your mind this question. Last year, in your area of responsibility, what worked better than you thought it would? It surprised you at how well it worked. I'm going to give you 15 seconds, starting now. How many of you said, I thought of something that worked better than I thought it was going to? Basically everyone. Now, listen to this logic. Because it's very important too. Peter Drucker said this. He said, the staff will always resist the change that taking advantage of the opportunity would require. In other words, why didn't you take advantage of that opportunity? Well, that would mean changing this and this, and I don't think we're ready to change this and this and this. But when you think about it, often it seems silly to you why you're not. So there are three questions. Number one is, what was unexpectedly successful for you as well as each of your staff members? What was unexpectedly successful? Why are we resisting it? And number three, how could we take it to times 10? In other words, if we underestimated its potential, how do we then maximize its potential? And just brainstorm for a little bit. Whatever result we got, what would we have to do to take it to times 10? Because there's opportunity there we didn't see. So you basically say, of all the opportunities, what's the number one opportunity we've got that could blow the whole organization apart? It could just accelerate everything we're doing. Listen to your whole staff. Find the one thing that particularly could accelerate you toward the goal you've got. There may be five opportunities, but what's the number one that could be the most powerful in accelerating you? And then number five, as you get this filled out, who is the driver? And again, it may be you or it may be someone on your staff, but who's the driver to make this happen? And then are we ready to free up their time to 60% of what they're doing to make sure that our team stays focused and gets it done, actually? Because if they could get that done, it would make all the difference in the world. Again, the president of your company could use this same exact tool to look at your whole country. President of the biggest company in your Mercedes-Benz in Germany or whatever the biggest company in Poland is could use the same tool with his executive team or her executive team. Largest church, smallest church, and you personally could use this. And even though I developed it 10 years or so ago, it's still working today. And it will work 20, 30 years into the future with whatever you go into. If you take over a new organization, one of the first things I would do is go through this exercise with the team that's there and get their impressions of what do they see as the dream for the organization. And you may learn, my dream has been a little different than that. What is the number one goal their team thinks is important, etc. By the way, let me give you one quick side note. Whenever you take over something that's new, some of you are taking over maybe something that's brand new, just in the last year. There are four predictable years it will take you to get up to speed. Or if you've just taken on a brand new department or division, you've taken over anything that's new, even in the same organization, it will take you 4 years to get up to speed. And there are these 4 years. Number one is orientation. It doesn't mean you won't solve problems, take risks, spend money, hire and fire. But at the end of the first year, you'll turn to someone you know well and say, you know, I think I'm beginning to know what's going on over there. The second year is experimentation. Once you know what's really going on, you start experimenting at a whole different level. The third year is evaluation. You say, we've been trying it now for a year or so. Some of the things didn't work nearly as well as we thought. Some worked better than we imagined. The fourth year is when you hit acceleration. It doesn't matter how brilliant you are, it takes 4 years. It doesn't matter how experienced you are, it takes 4 years. Here's the bad news. It takes 4 years for your staff as well as for you. And so you're expecting your staff to come in 4 days, be up to speed. Unrealistic. That's an illusion. It'll disillusion you later in that person. If you're assuming that in 4 days or 4 weeks or 4 months, they're going to be on top of their game because they're so smart, they have such a high IQ, and they came from an experienced company over here. Doesn't work that way. This is not only meant to give you perspective, it's meant to reassure you. Because so many people feel, I've been on the job 4 months, and I still don't feel I know what's really going on over there, but I can't let them know it. Because they think they hired the wrong person. They think I'm a failure. They think I'm a dunce or a dense or dumb because I don't know everything that's going on yet. I say, you're not supposed to. Relax. It takes 4 years, not 4 days. Relax.